Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, May 8th, 2012, and I'm your host, Anastasia, filling in while Lavendar, Ariel, and Sierra are on the Sacred France Starseed Quest. I want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard tonight. And while we won't be having live questions during this show, the call-in number for listening is 917-889-8292. And if you like our show, please remember to click follow on our show page and tell a friend about us. Now, for our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings, and you can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage with a Stage 1 reading based on your natal astrological chart. Our Stage 2 sessions are a one-on-one phone consultation, a reading with one of our gifted seers. We also offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. Now, while Lavendar, Ariel, and Sierra are away in France for the next couple of weeks, I remain behind to be available for Stage 2 clairvoyant readings. So, if you need some help, just give me a call at 888-881-0881. Or go to the StarseedHotline.com website and click on Anastasia's World. You know I'm happy to be of assistance whatever you need clairvoyant insight into your life. Okay, now before I highlight tonight's show, I just want to ask you to bear with a few flaws in the sound content that may come up from time to time during the program due to the fact that this interview was conducted with cellular phones. Once in a while, your ears might pick up a few clicks or a few split-second lapses, which is due to packet loss that often occurs with cell phones. Now, I regret this, but I sincerely hope you'll hang in there in order to glean from the extensive information that you're going to hear in tonight's interview. Now, for tonight, I haven't prepared a segment of High Strangeness with Anastasia simply because you are about to hear an entire program of extreme high strangeness of the UFO kind. Yes, we continue our interview with John Foster, abductee, contactee, and author of Imminent Discovery and To Earth from Heaven. His books can be obtained at Amazon.com, and his website is fosterufos.com. Now, this man's story has baffled and perplexed researchers, psychologists, scientists, and even other contactees who have gathered at conferences and elsewhere to hear his story, which has spanned 5 decades of his life. John's story is not a mainstream UFO encounter. Nevertheless, it can only be ignored at the risk of stumbling in humanity's search for greater truth about the unseen influences in our lives. His complex experiences connect to the human experience at multiple levels, touching upon human history, native spirituality, biblical encounters, Egyptian art, Egyptian philosophy, prophecy, coming earth changes, numerous galactic races, multiple craft, quantum physics, scientific progress, alien genetic engineering, and a lot more. So sit back, loosen the boundaries of your thoughts, and get ready for an all-out consciousness workout as you share his experiences in tonight's show. So So now, Starseed listeners, it's time to welcome our guest, John Foster, to our program. Hello, John. Welcome to tonight's show. Welcome back.
It's nice to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. Last week's program was exciting and wonderful. We got lots of feedback from listeners who were having experiences of memories coming back to them because they were able to listen to your story. And that's pretty exciting. It was really good stuff. We left off last week's program talking about Archangel Michael, and I'd like to pick up tonight where we left off last time. I want to tell our listeners that John's story is so extensive and so lengthy. There have been so many encounters and so many fascinating things that have happened to him that we can't possibly cover it all in our programs. But I do want to tell you that you can read about John's stories. He has two books out, Imminent Discovery, and another one, To Earth from Heaven, both available at Amazon.com, and also at John's website, FosterUFOs.com. And during tonight's program, I'm going to encourage listeners to go to John's website, FosterUFOs.com, and to look at the drawings on his website of the encounters that we're going to discuss tonight, as well as some of his other encounters. So this is going to give you a visual representation, briefly, of some of the things that we're talking about tonight. Now, John has also done a book that is a companion book to Imminent Discovery, that is the Imminent Discovery Book of Illustrations, which is a collection of all of the drawings that John has done that illustrate his experiences. So it also is a really fascinating, intriguing collection of art that I suggest that you get, because you may very well find that some of these craft are vehicles that you may have encountered yourself. I know that one of the craft that John draws, the vehicle that has windows, the round circular craft, saucer type, very, very similar to the one that I saw in the 1970s at the base of Mount Shasta. So we've got a lot to talk about regarding John's experiences, and you're going to find out that other people have had the same sightings of similar craft across the world and through time, but we'll get to that here in just a minute. So I need to hand this over to John, and let's start talking tonight about the Sheridan Creek Fire Guard Cabin experience, which is where you began your encounter with Michael.
Okay, actually, we encountered Michael shortly after I was born, and the Sheridan Creek Cabin occurred in 1957, and I was 19 years old, I believe.
You were going to that cabin with a friend.
Yes.
Working for the Forest Service, and you two guys manned this cabin for the Forest Service. You were put on trail duty to maintain trails and such and other things as well. And so you guys were in this cabin. I thought it was fun that you talked about one of your friends whipping up some sourdough bread or some sourdough.
Oh, yeah.
And your morning breakfast and all of that. I mean, these kinds of things can really get a person into the mood of being in the cabin in the woods, a few guys, you know, getting ready for their work day. And you guys just having, you know, just finished your meal, and then you heard a loud explosion.
We thought it was inside. We thought the explosion was inside. And the fellow who made the sourdough, and we ate a lot of sourdough because they wouldn't allow us to have a refrigerator. And, of course, sourdough doesn't require refrigeration. Anyway, we heard an explosion. It sounded like it was from inside the cabin, and we thought, well, the water heater blew up, but we didn't have a water heater. So we heard the explosion again, and we ran to the kitchen to see if the fellow was okay. And he was actually foreman of our crew, and he was okay. So we all gathered in the center of this big log cabin room, and we looked outside, and there were craft that were manifesting from haze and distorted atmosphere and a kind of churning fog, you would say. And they became completely visible, and they came right up close to the cabin windows. And so we knew that it was us that were their interest. And anyway, then they kind of faded away, and they disappeared, and we didn't see them anymore. And the foreman was really frightened, and since he was the foreman, he appointed my friend and I to go out and see what was going on. And, of course, we were officially working for the Forest Service, and we would be responsible then for things that were happening in and around the forest. And so we went outside, and we saw this small craft, maybe no more than 3 foot across, and it was hovering a little above head high, and a voice started talking to us and telling us that they wanted us further out in the forest. Of course, it was really strange, and we decided I didn't want any part of it, and we went back inside the cabin. Anyway, there was a manifestation in the cabin, and there was a volume of fog that manifested in a hissing roar, and there was a lizard-like creature that stood on the floor, and he told us that we were wanted outside in the trees, and we sort of, and he sort of dissipated back into wherever he came from. And I know this is, it's hard to believe, but this actually really happens, and there are thousands, probably millions of people that have witnessed this sort of thing. So we feared the consequences if we didn't go out. So my friend and I went out into the trees, and the sun had just about set. There was still a glow of evening light. And there were several things happened that night, and it was kind of like, I was telling Anastasia that it was sort of like the Odyssey, the Greek classic, the Odyssey, where one thing would happen, and then we would notice something over away from us a few yards. And one time, for instance, there were two guys that were waving us over, so we would go over there, and something else would happen, and something else would happen. And this went on all night. The explosion started right after supper, and the encounter lasted until well after dawn the next morning, and we were late for work, actually.
This is one of your more mind-bending experiences, John, I think, not only figuratively but literally, because you were pulled in so many different directions.
This was the keynote experience, you might say, and I was 19 here, and this was the experience where they actually just flat out told us who they were and what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's very exciting.
As you mentioned earlier, it was when we encountered Michael, and they told us that was Michael.
Now, John, where is this Sheridan Creek cabin? What part of the country was this in?
It was in Wyoming. It's very close to the Tetons.
Well, that's pretty significant to our Starseed listeners. And you went out with your friend, and it was getting dark.
Yeah, since you brought that up, I might mention that we did also have several or too many encounters in and around the Tetons.
Were there more encounters around the Tetons than perhaps anywhere else?
No, I would say the encounters actually happened from coast to coast, Canada to Mexico, basically in eastern Nebraska, but there were a lot of them that happened in the Teton area, and I was attracted strongly to return to the Tetons time and again, especially in my adult life after my kids left home.
Well, that's just really fascinating. And was there a particular time of the year that you were drawn to the Tetons?
Springtime. Every springtime, it was like irresistible. I had to go to the Tetons. Okay, well, that night we went out, and one of the first things we heard was it was a disc-type craft that was moving in a clearing from one end to the other, and it would disappear and then reappear, and there was a voice coming from the craft, and it was talking about history and other things that we didn't quite understand, the nature of the universe, you might say. And there was music in the background.
John, what kind of music was that?
Classical music.
You to bring that up. I wanted to mention to the listeners that John has noted that these entities are fond of classical music. Isn't that so, John?
Yes. Actually, when I was just 2 or 3 years old, they forced a neighborhood boy and I to listen to classical music in a craft. And then a lot of times we would hear classical music. And I read then, after I had my recollections, that classical music tunes up the neural pathways in the brain, and that my assumption then is that when you listen to classical music, you become more open and aware of the hidden side of life, you might say, the spiritual side of life.
That's just a wonderful bit of information, John. So,
I think Mozart knew that, and I think that he probably had spiritual encounters.
I would tend to agree with that, John, definitely. Oh. And so we're going to go back now to your cabin experience. I'm sorry, but I wanted to interject that. It was an opportune moment.
Well, anyway, we tried to get away. We were just really frightened, and so we hid in the sagebrush. And we were kind of split up, and I heard a roaring sound and what was I later recognized as music coming from above the trees behind me. And I turned around, and a man came walking out of the forest in kind of a distorted atmosphere. And then, of course, the distortion dissipated, and it was just absolutely normal. And he began talking nonstop about history and something spiritual and the brotherhood and our improvement as human beings. Finally, he told me to tell my friend to come over because he knew where he was hiding. And he told us that there would be a strange occurrence happen. And we were standing there as he was talking to us, and we heard something, and we looked up, and here, flying right towards us, is a small, what appeared to be a small miniature tornado, and it landed right in front of us, and
wow.
There was a kind of churning fog. It landed on a large bush, and there was a churning fog.
It landed on a bush, John?
Yes, right.
That's so reminiscent of Moses' encounter. But
I always think of that. Mm-hmm. You could have called it smoke, you know. In
mm-hmm.
other words, if I had seen that and I hadn't, I would describe it as a burning bush. But it wasn't.
Had you been a more primitive person, that's probably exactly what you would have thought.
Yeah, probably. And the small tornado, of course, would be, you could refer to as the whirlwinds that are described in the Bible. And
absolutely.
So, you know, well, anyway, as the fog and churning cloud got bigger and bigger, we noticed there was an object inside with windows, and just frightened us, you know, because the object appeared to be bigger than the churning fog. And so we ran away, and the man had told us that they were preparing, he used the word they a lot, and he said they were preparing for us a place where we could learn. And so we ran away, and after a while we noticed another object, and two fellows standing there, and they waved us over, and they told us we had to get in for what I call a conditioning session. And while we were inside, a light came up in front of my forehead, and it would hover right in front of my forehead. They would tell me to turn around, face the door, and kneel down. And I felt excruciating forces on my body and mind. And this somehow, according to all the conversations that I remember, was to improve myself as a human being. They told us we could get out and that we would meet an old man. And we met the old man, and he told me I would have a strange encounter. And I felt myself rise above the ground, up above the clouds, and I saw...
You began to levitate.
That's what it felt like. It was a levitation. And but it had to be a time travel. And I think we talked about time travel a little bit in the last session, didn't we?
Gary, we're going to get into that more tonight, I hope.
Okay.
So
well, this was probably a special, what I call time travel episode. In other words, it was short. It wasn't a long time travel trip. At any rate, I was hovering above the clouds. I was probably 2,000 feet above the ground, and I saw craft fly towards me from over the horizon. And the voice told me, and we normally heard a voice that told us what was going on and educated us in other ways. And the voice told me that they were preparing people for a time when they would return and take them away. And those qualified and willing would go, and those not qualified or willing would stay and suffer some kind of consequence that I don't remember. At any rate, while he was saying this, and just after, before the craft reached me, they dove down through the clouds, and I followed them. I was told to follow them. And we arrived at what seemed to, on the ground at what seemed to be a small city, and there were old houses around, and there was a one particular old house where there was a man and a woman on the porch and three children playing beside the porch on the ground. And cloud developed above the children, and churning cloud, and it dissipated, and a craft manifested in that area above the children. And the woman was talking to the man, and all of a sudden, the woman and the children were gone instantly. I mean, just like you would snap your fingers. And it was repeated, and the man remained, and it was obvious he was completely drunk and smoking, and they pointed that out to me. Uh-huh. And
happened? You saw that scene, and then where did they take you?
Well, that was, they reminded me that of the statement before, that they were preparing people for a time when they would return and take them away and so forth. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I returned to the original location where I was, and my friend was really into Christianity in the fundamental sense, you might say, and he was a little agitated. They began talking about, he and the old man began talking about the archangels, Michael and Gabriel.
Now we need to remind our audience that, just in case they've forgotten, that you had a companion with you in the woods, and this is what you're talking about. Your
yes.
friend was beginning to get really distressed. So,
yes, he was really agitated because he was a devout, you might say, fundamental Christian. And anyway, he didn't go with me on the trip above the clouds and into the small city on the time travel thing. Anyway, when I was back on the ground, the old man asked him if he would like to meet Michael, and of course we both said yeah. And there was a brilliant light that manifested in the atmosphere a short distance away, and it moved in towards us and hovered right above us, a little further than I could reach up and touch. And voice started talking to us, and he talked to us about cooperating and listening to the old man and learning what they were trying to teach us that particular night. And I don't know if he mentioned the brotherhood or not, but there was the word brotherhood spoken several times that night. At any rate, then the light disintegrated and passed on. Now, I might say that there were many times that we saw the brilliant light from the time I was born until I was 48. And the voice, according to my recollections, appeared to be the same. So my guarded assumption is that that was possibly Michael those times.
Mm-hmm.
And one interesting thing to bring up at this point, since we're talking about Michael, is there was a family experience at Dillon Lake in 1975. In Colorado, one daughter.
In where was this? In where? You said that.
At Dillon.
John.
Oh, I'm sorry. At Dillon Lake in Colorado
in
1975.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And my daughter, who all the kids were in high school at that time, I believe, and my daughter was about ready to graduate from high school. And she and I were standing under the trees, and there was a light hovering right above the treetops. And the voice was speaking to us, and she remembers me talking to the voice back and forth. And one interesting thing, and we don't want to set me up as anything special, any more special than anybody else, but one thing she says is that I was speaking to the voice with the same authority that he spoke to us. So that is significant, I think, in when we think about spiritual beings, that we don't want to put them so much on a pedestal that we subordinate ourselves to something less than what we could be, you know.
That is a really important and really enlightened perspective, John.
Okay.
And that is really authentic. I'm glad you brought that up. So
yeah, and just everybody keep in mind that I'm not any more special than anybody else. I just remember and where other people don't. And
well, you're sharing with us some of the lessons that these incredible life experiences have taught you, and certainly.
Well, I think it'll help people if they actually know here's an engineer that was trained in research and development and was on the frontiers of science for part of his life. And I don't accept anything that isn't credible, that I can't, that isn't logically acceptable,
right.
You might say. Okay.
Well, this is a logical mind. Struggling with all of these things as you've done, John, was a real trial for you because a lot of this stuff is not logical, but you have managed to you know, survive it and learned a great wisdom from it. And as I know you, John, I know that so much of this you've incorporated into your being. This is not done with logic, but it's done from your heart. You're a man of great love and compassion, kindness, wisdom, and you're very calm. You have a lot of serenity. These are things that I think that you can't put a finger on for a pulse in a logical way, but it is something that's happened to you in a spiritual way and in the ways of the heart. And that's very important for listeners to know, because really this phenomenon isn't so much about figuring it out as it is about our personal growth and development and expansion of our metaphysical and spiritual capacities. This is how human beings overcome. And truly, John, you are an example of the refinement that a person achieves once they go through tremendous adversities and come out the other side. But anyway, to get back to your story about the events that happened at the forest there at the cabin, you mentioned Archangel Michael, but didn't they say something to you also about Gabrielle?
Yeah, my friend was constantly challenging the old man and whoever was talking to us, the voice from time to time. And the old man told us that, after this, we actually met Michael close up. He pointed out a cloud of fog that was on the ground, and we saw illuminations in the fog. And there was music, and my friend asked him about Gabriel and so forth. He said that Michael was more in charge of the battle to save men, almost a biblical statement. And he said Gabriel was more in charge of helping men develop their spirituality. And he was off someplace else, not at Sheridan Creek Cabin.
Isn't that something? Now, I want to mention, too, that you stated in your book, there's just something here I want to read from your book. This is on page 207 of Eminent Discovery. And I'm quoting you, John. They said they were going to enlist us into their army so we could help fight the battle. They asked us to commit ourselves to their army and the battle. So what do you have to say about that, John? Tell us what they were talking about here.
Yeah, he told us that we would do an out-of-body experience, and we were just completely frightened because we had never heard of such a thing, we didn't think, although we had. And we sort of felt like we levitated above a tree close by. It was a treetop, and we noticed there were three men standing there where we had been, and the voice told us just what you read, that they were fighting the battle, they were trying to enlist us into their army to fight the battle to save men. And then there were several things happening later that supported that, and I'll get into that in a second. But one thing I wanted to point out is that it was years after my recollections that I realized that two of those men standing down on the ground were myself and my friend, and we were seeing our bodies standing by the old man.
Well, anyone who's had an out-of-body experience will recognize that as being completely authentic.
Anyway, the old man eventually told us the Brotherhood was in this illuminating cloud of that was on the ground, and he said the Brotherhood would present itself. So there was music, and then the craft, the dish-shaped craft and so forth, began floating out of the cloud right past us, about chest high. And it was like a grand promenade. And anyway, they finally...
A grand promenade of what?
Well, I called it in the book, I called them weird tin soldiers because they were metallic. They looked like metallic disc-shaped craft.
Okay.
He told us the Brotherhood individuals were inside of the craft.
Well, that is really fascinating. Okay. And I want to let the listeners know that at this Sheridan Creek cabin experience, there were just numerous vehicles and manifestations that occurred all in one night. And this is just, we're just touching on one of them here, but a promenade.
One thing we could say at this point is that there is an ebook version that your listeners can purchase, and it's really inexpensive. It's $3 from Amazon.com, and if you just search Imminent Discovery by John Foster or Tour from Heaven by John Foster, that'll take you to that ebook, and you can download a Kindle version to your PC that's free.
Well, that's far out. They can do that tonight.
Yeah, they could do it even while they were listening. On with the story. The man told us to follow him, and we followed him a short distance. We witnessed what seemed to be a slideshow on a cloud. There were a lot of clouds, and he showed us different buildings that the Brotherhood had built, and he tried to convince us that we needed to join the Brotherhood there and then. Anyway, at one point, my friend really got agitated, and so he wanted to know who they were and what they were doing. And he said they were the monitors or keepers of the earth, responsible to a hierarchy that included the archangels Michael and Gabriel. And he also, later on, Michael and Gabriel were responsible to a hierarchy. And we had information that included the entity of Christ, the spiritual entity of Christ. He said the person of Christ was just like other human beings and was reincarnated on earth today, helping to improve humankind. At any rate, he said they were... they were responsible to the hierarchy, and they were not allowed to interfere with the affairs of humankind except at certain times in history when things were going awry or when things were dangerous. And he said this was one of those times or one of those eras. And he went on to say certain things that indicated that they had everything in hand and that they were indeed going to save humankind from destroying itself.
Well, wow, my goodness. Yes.
Okay, yeah, and now that's probably the essence. And remember, this was the keynote experience that sort of explained the purpose of everything that I had experienced all through my life up to 19 years old, and then, of course, after that.
Is that all you want to tell us about this Sheridan Creek incident?
Well, no, there were many things
that
happened.
There's a TP, and there's some symbols that I want to talk about. And
yeah, okay.
I thought it was interesting that one of the beings commented to your friend, who was really sort of freaking out in a religious way about his religious beliefs, and the entities turned to your friend and said something to the effect that, "I don't know why you humans have to depend on Jesus for every little thing.
You need
to find your own 2 feet." Isn't that kind of what he said?
That's when they explained, my friend was challenging him about the entity of Jesus, and that's when he said, "When will humans quit relying on Jesus so heavily and take responsibility themselves for their spiritual development?" He asked him about the churches, and the voice told us that the churches were not doing what they were originally set up to do, and that was to help humans develop their spiritual and metaphysical abilities and talents, you might say. And they named churches, and most all of the churches had not lived up to that responsibility. And
so,
go ahead.
Well, I don't know that this is the time we want to get into Mormonism just yet, John. So.
Okay. Well, the Mormon Church was included, and they talked about Christ, and you know, that's when he went into, you know, he was a little put off that people relied so much on they didn't have to do anything, and they just sat back and were saved. And so he indicated that humans had to develop effort into making themselves better people.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Interactive reality. Okay.
Yeah.
So then,
he said, now let me say one more thing about Christ here, is that he said the entity of Christ was in charge of everything in this corner of the universe. In other words, he was the chief guy or
okay.
gal.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. As an energy, as a Christed energy.
Yes, and the feeling I had was that he was a spiritual individual, and
okay.
Almost everything we talked about during encounters indicated that even though an entity was spiritual, it was an individual. And I think that's important to know, because we can get into a discussion on we're all one and we're at the same time completely separate and so forth, and we create our own worlds and that sort of thing.
Exactly, and that really goes into physics, high physics, as well as high metaphysics, about unity and individuality. And really, that is a complex subject, and I hope we'll be able to get into that maybe at our next show.
Just say one thing here. One reason my encounters, I believe, are so important is that there are answers for those people who are ingrained in the scientific arena, that there are answers, and there are logical answers, just as logical as those that they're discovering in quantum mechanics and so forth.
Mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm. Science has really taken some leaps and bounds, even in the last 10 years, discovering wonderful things that are really supporting metaphysical knowledge, and as well as NASA and researchers are making new discoveries, all kinds of things that are just advancing at an escalated rate. So we're moving very forward in the advancement of our primitive understandings. I mean, we're getting a little bit further along than we have been for many years, so...
Yeah.
A lot of things that are happening that are supporting our growth metaphysically that are also substantiating it in a scientific way. So you're right.
Right, and my encounter sort of bridged the gap there, you might say, because of my background.
That's right. Now let's talk about the teepee for a second. Can we do that?
Teepee. Okay, well, let me just briefly, because a time where another craft landed, there were humans on board, and they seemed very familiar. I call them familiar strangers. We went through another period where there was an object, and the familiar strangers and I and orphans from Latin American countries were given a lecture about the Brotherhood and what they were doing in what I call a project. And we can get into that later.
Well, we can talk about that now. Did that begin to occur at the Sheridan Creek cabin?
All of that
when
happened.
When you first met the orphans?
All of that happened that night. Now, when this craft was hovering just in front of me, my friend and the boys were arguing so bad that I broke down and began to weep. And the craft started swooping in over my head and exploded over my head to kind of bring me out of it. And this was a common occurrence with other people, too. Anyway, the boys told us that I would have a strange experience again and to walk into a clearing that was close by, which I did. The craft landed, and I was told to enter the craft, and so I did. And I saw these individuals, like 8 to 12 individuals. And we were told to get out, and we saw a building, and I have a drawing of the building across the clearing, and they just seemed extremely familiar. At any rate, I was told to come back, and that ended, and the disc dissipated, and my friend and I began talking about what happened. We noticed an object complex that was a low tent-like object in a teepee, and we were curious, so I crawled into the tent, and nothing happened, and we walked around, and I started hearing the voice talking about the Indians, and this happened quite frequently from the time I was, right after I was born until the end, was they would talk about eternal knowledge and wisdom and something to do with the Indians and the buffalo. At any rate, while I was standing there by the teepee, I began to hear noises behind me, and I turned around, and there was a volume of distorted atmosphere and fog that began to dissipate, and I saw and heard Indians in a circle dancing the circle dance. And there was a buffalo nearby, and I was told, given information about the circle dance and the Indians and their relationship with the buffalo.
And this was somewhat of a vision. Didn't the buffalo appear in sort of a distorted fog as well?
Yeah, I interpret it as extremely physical and something else, okay? Anyway, the voice called me back to the teepee and instructed my friend and I to get inside. He told us we would have an out-of-body experience, and we found ourselves rising above the ground, and the voice told us that we would meet an old Indian guide, which he introduced us and so forth. And the thing is that we couldn't see him. We couldn't see each other, but we were aware of their presence and each other's presence. And he said the Indian would go get the horses, and we were going to ride the horses out of body, including the horses, which we did.
Oh, that far out.
Yeah. The horses are a key part of my encounters also. Anyway, we finally reached the ground, and we decided we better get to the cabin because everything was getting so weird. And we ran across what I call an elliptical object complex, where three little objects together. And there was a man standing in front, and he said we were then about to be educated, which was the original intent, if you remember the small tornado and so forth. But another man came running up, and he said they aren't to go into the objects yet, that they're needed off to the side. So we went off to the side, and we saw several men standing in a line, and they had apparatus in front of them. And it was explained that this was a brotherhood of men in history that had created certain inventions. And they all had their inventions in front of them, and they began explaining certain things about their inventions. And my friend just got extremely berserk, and the guide that was with us told him to calm down, that there was an old wise man that we would meet, and that he would really be offended if, you know, if he kept that up. Anyway, there was a teepee nearby, and the wise man came out of the teepee, and he began explaining things about the Brotherhood. And
can I stop you there for one
second? Sure, you bet.
I was hoping you would bring up this inventor thing and these men throughout history. I was just going to ask you about that. Now, the teepee and the old man that came out, was this a Caucasian man? What did he look like?
Well, yeah, he could have been Caucasian. He had a real long beard, and he had a lot of hair on his face. And he had a pointed cap on top, and it had symbols on it. And it had, the teepee had symbols on it, and there were really strange symbols.
Well, now you describe him something like looking like Merlin.
Like who?
Merlin, sort of a magician's cap, is that what it looks
like? Yeah, right, or you might say a dunce cap.
we get the idea. So so the symbols on the cap match the symbols on the teepee.
Well,
Yeah, sort of. Okay. And I'm looking at a picture that John has drawn, audience, of this teepee. It's on page 221 of his book, Eminent Discovery. And it shows the man and the teepee and the table with the inventions. John, you said that some of these are pi symbols. And I got a chuckle out of what you said about the moon.
He said they were alchemy symbols and some ancient Greek symbols. And there was a half moon or a quarter moon. And he said they used those symbols for other things besides symbols on outdoor toilets, outhouses. So there was a sense of humor, yeah.
The sense of humor, how we might be viewed from the other side of existence. So, anyway,
yeah, I had a friend one time say that he was a UFO researcher and that I had met, and he said, you know, he said, you might believe all these stories, except I haven't heard a story yet where someone was going to the toilet. And so I had remembered an encounter where my friend was using the toilet, so I related that to him. Then he could accept the encounters a little more easily. Anyway, while these guys who were standing there explaining their inventions, my friend just got really agitated, and the old man started to chew him out, and he said that they were a brotherhood and that we were to enlist into the brotherhood, and that, you know, as a matter of fact, we needed to learn how to spell the name. And so we saw in kind of picturesque form the lettering of the Brotherhood above the inventors. And I can't remember for sure, but it's a possibility it was Rosicrucians or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But it's a possibility that your mind just had to fill in the blank.
That's a possibility in that case.
In reality, you actually cannot recall, and it did seem to be in... Did it appear like a foreign language? Was it in symbolic form?
Well, it was. It was probably either it was a foreign word to me. I couldn't, and it was a long. It was a long word. A lot of letters.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting, John. So then, that appeared, and then what happened? What else did he say about the Brotherhood?
Well, he just chewed us out and said that we had better cooperate, you know, and or fear the consequences, which I don't think there were any consequences, but he was trying to convince us that we needed to cooperate. Mm-hmm. And at any rate, the guide that was standing by us told us that everything was over there and that we could return to the elliptical shaped complex. Which we did, and the man that was there told us we had to go inside, and we had to go into the back, and I don't know how to tell you this exactly where it's completely meaningful, but they continually told us we had to improve ourselves as human beings, and he said one of the things that you have to do is to realize that you can create things with your mind. And he said, look outside of the window, and there was a window there in a seat. And he said, now, and of course it was night, and he said, okay, now visualize that it's daylight, and it'll be daylight. So I tried, and of course I couldn't make it be daylight outside. And he said, okay, you would try to help me. And so he helped me, and it was daylight outside that I saw.
That's so significant. That's just really, really amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And we know now that the consciousness does affect reality, and the listeners of this program are very much into that and understanding of it.
Yeah.
So here was an early experience. What year did this occur, John?
1957.
See, audience, this is 1957, and here's someone...
It was actually in June of 1957.
Okay. A demonstration of how consciousness affects reality, which is really key into what we're going into coming up, the energy that we need to emulate in order to help the planet and ourselves and humanity. So anyway, John,
let me go a little bit further here inside the elliptical shaped objects. There were some strange people sitting across the aisle from us. There were two rows of seats there. And they told us that these were Latin American orphans and that we had to help the orphans. And there was one small girl there that wanted to talk to me personally, and she begged for me to cooperate and help, otherwise she would perish. Now, that's significant because there are other encounters later on where I met the same girl that pleaded with me to help, otherwise she would perish. Okay, and then we were told to go into the other larger room, which was the larger elliptical-shaped object, and what I call familiar strangers were there. And I noticed particular individuals, and I recognized their movements, their personality, and so forth, although I didn't know their names. The man at the front, there were chairs there, and we all sat in the chairs, and he began to lecture us about the project, what he called the project, that would help the orphans from south of the border and also other places in the world.
Now, I have to interject here that the project was for future time. Is that correct, John?
That's correct. That's why we were being then introduced to the project, and we of course, it's an extremely vast, complex, detailed
And we might note here that this was, John, over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we are facing a time of great economic uncertainty across the world. We're experiencing a huge number of influx of people from south of the border into the country. In your book, you mentioned that they predicted a time of great physical want coming upon the planet and that these children would need help and assistance. And we are seeing the possibility, even the probability, of these predictions coming into being.
Yeah, things are happening pretty much the way I was shown in the future time travels and so forth. Eventually, we received a lecture on the nature of the craft, the scientific propulsion and so forth, and the helping the orphans, and we were released to go. I was told to get into one of the smaller elliptical objects, turn around, face the door, and light came up in front of my forehead, and I felt the excruciating forces on my body and mind. And then we sort of headed out for the cabin, and we saw the teepee and an upside-down type tub object. And in the teepee, we were lectured, or before we went in, we were told about some of the symbols on the teepee. We were lectured about the Native Americans inside the teepee, and then we were told to go to the tub. The front and back were identical, except the front was plush and the back was austere, and we were told those who were qualified could ride in the front, and those who weren't had to ride in the back. Well, after we were lectured by an old man at the rear of the tub, and I got in for another conditioning session, which was excruciating, we went around to the front, and we saw the front door open, and we decided we would just crawl in, whether we were qualified or not. And we did, and it was nothing happened, and we got out, and then the voice told us that we had qualified, we'd passed the test, that all we had to do is believe ourselves good enough to ride in the front, and we were accepted then. So that's a good lesson for everybody, is to have confidence in yourself and that you are on the right path and that you are good enough to participate in anything that's high that you want to. But anyway, we were released to go to the cabin. We went to the cabin, and we were exhausted, and it was about 5 in the morning. And I began to fall asleep. My friend yelled at me that someone was standing over me, and I opened my eyes, and there's this huge lizard-like or alligator-like creature hovering over me. He told me to go into the storeroom, turn the light on, stare at the light, and concentrate on building buildings in the future, which I did, and then I went back and I slept for, he was gone, and I slept for an hour, maybe or so, and my friend woke me up, and we were late for work, and but there were craft hovering and flying slowly inside the cabin, and the voice was lecturing me about the construction of the build of the cabin and the fireplace. And I just almost went crazy, and we ran out of the room and headed for the truck to head off to build a campground nearby.
Okay, we have talked about your Sheridan Creek experience, which is really extensive, and the listeners are going to have to get the book to find out more. And I want to take a second to remind everybody that John's book, Eminent Discovery, and To Earth from Heaven, as well as the Eminent Discovery Book of Illustrations, is available on Amazon.com and also at John's website, fosterufos.com. And I hope that some of you tonight are looking in on John's website so that you can look at some of these pictures of his experiences and enjoy that right along with me as I'm looking at his book. So, John, we talked a little bit about the Native Americans and the buffalo. And so I feel that that is important to the spiritual underpinnings of your experience, and as well as the dysfunctionality of our present social paradigm, where the planet is headed due to our materialistic and profit-oriented mindset. And in my own personal spiritual practice, as well as through my own clairvoyant work, I'm fully aware of our connection to the earth, the interconnectedness of all things, and our real dire need to connect to the planet Gaia Sophia and reconnect in the old ways in order to ensure the survival of our species. So let's start off with the others, the beings that you talked to and that spoke with you, and their interest in the Native American and the buffalo. And also, I want to point out that John has indicated to me that he has had a number of present time 3D reality experiences with several tribes in his area, and we'll probably get into that just a little bit. But, John, what do you have to say about their interest in teaching you about the Native American way and the interconnectedness that the natives had with the buffalo, as well as probably all other beings and life forms? The Native Americans consider animals and rocks and trees to be all of their relations, which indeed they truly are all of our relations. So let's start from there.
Okay, well, you could say that it all started when I was 2 or 3 years old, that I had an encounter out in the backyard while my father was working on the garden, and there was a craft that showed up in the distorted atmosphere, and he began to become what I would call paralyzed. And
Your father became paralyzed, because I
yelled at him, that something was happening behind him. And anyway, a manifestation took place in front of me, and the manifestations were a lot of times included a hissing fog that would spew into the atmosphere, and then it would dissipate, and there would be a craft that would be sitting there that would gradually come into view. And at this time, it was a small booth. It looked similar to the front of a stagecoach, with one open door and one open window on each side. And I began to hear a voice, and it was talking about something I know now was eternal knowledge and wisdom, and something to do with the Indians and buffalo. And it didn't quite make sense, but there was eternal knowledge and wisdom in Indians and buffalo. And at that time, I heard music that I know now was Home on the Range. And that was that would have been 1940, around 1940, okay, 39 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, this particular scenario happened periodically throughout my life for the entire 46 years, where we would hear a voice or a sound, and a craft would show up, maybe the coffin, maybe the small discs, and they would hover nearby. And then we would hear a voice talking, encouraging everybody to gather around for eternal knowledge and wisdom and something to do with the Indians and buffalo. And pretty soon we would see the winged saucer fly in, and certain things would happen. And in some cases, we wouldn't know how, but we would turn, and the booth was sitting on the ground, this stagecoach-like thing. And the voice would encourage everyone to gather around for eternal knowledge and wisdom, Indians of Buffalo. And they would encourage people to get inside the booth and sit on the benches for the same reason.
I need to stop you for a second, John, just so that our listeners can keep up with you here. You mentioned a coffin, so I don't think we've talked about that before, and a lot of people are going, huh? Huh? What? So, and I want to just, we're going to stop for a second, and we'll sort of expand onto this natural philosophy of the indigenous tribes here in a moment. But incidentally, let's talk about the craft, both the booth and the coffin. The coffin's particularly interesting. Now, listeners, this is a manifestation of a craft that John describes as having looked like a coffin. And what is so incredible about that, when you get beyond the sort of initial, some people are going to have the creeps at the very idea of a coffin, but John, this is significant in Egyptian history. Explain to us what you know about that.
Okay, well, I was at a conference one time, and I think I can say the name. Robert Dean was giving a talk, and he was showing slides about his connection to UFOs, and a slide came up, and it was a coffin-shaped object. It was rounded, it wasn't squared off, but it was primarily rounded. And if you go to my website, I think there's a drawing of that under, if you click on drawings. And he explained that this was a Middle Age painting that a fellow from the Mideast had done during the Middle Ages sometime. I don't know exactly when.
The Middle Ages? You cut out the Middle Ages?
The Middle Ages, yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And he said that the author, the artist, had called it, I believe, to my best recollection, was a column. And in that sense, the column, and it was an ancient Egyptian celestial boat that took the recent dead to the other side. Now, while I'm talking about that, also I was told two or three times that the, and I have found out a few times that the alligator or the lizard-like creatures, who were very kind, by the way, they were very, very kind, the most kind, including the humans. I saw one time a friend brought me a part of a book, and it had one of these little lizard alligator-like creatures in it, and it was described in ancient Egypt as the entity that took the recent dead to the other side and explained what was happening after a person died. Okay, so the coffin has a connection to the alligator creatures and lizard creatures in history, in ancient history.
That's just fascinating, John.
Not always, but several times when we would be walking through the woods or we'd walking someplace and we would look over and this coffin would be sitting there. And had an antenna on it, and on top of the antenna would be a red light that was a penetrating light. It penetrated your whole being, and it irradiated out into the atmosphere and irradiated the near atmosphere a kind of a tint of red and sometimes blue, okay?
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So this is where science, for instance, connects with spirituality. There is a reason for that.
Share that with us.
Well, I don't know what the reason is, but it almost looks as if it was a radio frequency type of energy that was being transmitted. And I would using my logic as an engineer, I would say that what the energy was it was penetrating my being and helping my being to become less constricted by the physical body.
Uh-huh.
See what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh.
Okay, and that was also true of the distorted atmosphere and so forth. Anyway, we don't need to get into that. You wanted to get into the coffin,
yeah, I just
right?
I wanted to mention that there's other instances where people have come forward with drawings of the very things that you had drawn, John, the very things.
Yeah, I've had people tell me they've seen the coffin before, and one lady told me that she was taken into the coffin by a spiritual being, and they took off someplace that she doesn't remember.
And there have been other craft that you have seen that have been described by Aboriginals. That was where the woman was giving a presentation at a conference. Was that?
Yeah, that was the windowed saucer. If you,
Just tell us the story about that, her encounter with the Aboriginal.
Okay, I was at a conference again, and there was a fellow sitting next to me that was a researcher, fairly well known, and knew what he was doing, and I had first met him, and I had a stack of drawings of about 50 drawings that I handed him to thumb through. He was interested in my story. And there was Cynthia Hines from South Africa, a South African journalist, that was sent out into the bush. I think she might have been from Johannesburg, I'm not sure, to investigate a UFO encounter that happened to an African tribe. And she went out and she was interviewing this particular fellow around the campfire. And he said, well, as he got towards the end of the interview, he said, well, do you want me to draw you a picture of what I saw? And she said, of course. And remember, we were at a conference and she was speaking to a large audience at the conference, the fellow sitting next to me. Well, she said that the tribesman went to the fire, picked up a piece of charcoal, and drew a picture on a board, and she said, and this is what he drew, and she put the picture up on the overhead screen, and the fellow sitting next to me looked at the picture, and he looked down at the picture in his hand that I had drawn, and he said they were exactly the same, even including the shading.
Now, that is an incredible, amazing synchronicity. That's just
yes.
amazing. And there are other indicators, too. You said that there was, in our conversation earlier, that there have been pictures from history, medieval
right.
Europe, and you mentioned a picture of Jesus and Mary together. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I don't know how many pictures there are of Jesus and Mary, paintings from the Middle Ages that depict craft in the sky above them, and particularly one object was rectangular. It looked like a booth, and it looked similar to the booth that I encountered that I described a little earlier.
So
and
all of that,
although not exactly the same, but it was flying in the sky above them, and I had seen the booth fly in distorted atmosphere in the sky above me and some friends.
Well, that's just all incredible information and points to the validity of your story and also the widespread long-term interaction of these objects with the human race.
Can I tell you a couple side stories here real quick?
Sure.
I had gone to a talk nearby, and there was an Indian woman from the Omaha tribe, and I had showed her some of my drawings, and she said the booth had been seen on the reservation several times, and especially was involved in teenage boys. Also, the first conference I ever went to, there was a fellow that had heard about my story that was studying ancient art and symbolism in history. And when he saw my drawings, he said the little lizard fellas in the booth especially were part of Native American lore. So that was another supporting fact that what I encountered was real and the story is accurate.
Well, that's just remarkable. And something I want to remind our listeners of, if they haven't figured this out already, is that your story, John, is not meant necessarily mainstream ufology. It is highly unique and truly the most detailed description of UFO encounters that I've ever read, and I think it's about the most detailed and interesting and diverse stories out there. I don't think there's anything else like this anywhere. But when
Billy Myers in Switzerland possibly has his encounters maybe were as complex, I'm not sure.
Well, you have all of these substantiated events with witnesses that you've corroborated with, as well as pictures from history and from distant tribes and tribes in our own country, and all of these different factors that demonstrate that your story needs to be taken very seriously, and we need to learn from it, John, because it's just so full of opportune teachings.
Well, knowing that I'm a pragmatic fella who, when I see facts that corroborate far-out ideas, I actually need to know more about it. In other words, I need more proof. The information didn't really make sense about eternal knowledge and wisdom and the Indians and buffalo. And so I thought I would try to seek out more meaning, and I went up to the reservations a couple of times in South Dakota and met with some of the medicine men and the spiritual teachers. And I also, it just so happened coincidentally that there was an Indian family that was educating the white man here in eastern Nebraska, and I had some encounters with them. And I witnessed and experienced some of the most phenomenal, unbelievable things during those periods that you might say defied science, that connected the physical world to the spiritual. So I just wanted to mention that briefly, and those are stories in themselves that I could probably write another book on.
Well, that's so enticing, but we don't have enough time, so maybe we can do that in another show, John. So let's go on with the continuation of what you call Familiar Strangers and the project.
Okay, well, this is heading toward the main. I found out later when I could put all the pieces together and try to figure out what was really going on. Throughout the years, I had what I call future time travels, where and you have to keep in mind that I was almost never alone in just a few short periods during these encounters. But during these time travel experiences, there would be a craft that would show up, and it's normally the what I call the elongated saucer, which is would be a disc kind of stretched out, you might say, in, with windows. And most often it would manifest through the distorted atmosphere, fog and haze, that sort of thing. And we would hear the voice, and he would coax the friend or relative who happened to be with me on board. And we would get on board, and there would be the same, every time, the same 8 to 12 individuals that I recognized. I recognized their movement, their tone of the voice, their looks, everything. But I couldn't figure out where I had met them before. And we would take off, and we would travel to certain locations, mostly in eastern Nebraska, and land, and we were shown and told what we were to do in the future. And to make a very long story short, I was trained through these experiences to build buildings, to design and build certain buildings in certain ways. I was given extremely detailed physical specifications for the buildings. For instance, they told me what size of nuts and bolts to use for anchor bolts, how to mix the concrete and the mortar for bricks, and that sort of thing. And there were unique features of the buildings and how to construct those particular features.
And what were these buildings supposed to be for, John?
Well, basically, they were three categories, you might say. The first building we were to build is, and this is one of the most important, is a high school for the orphans. And I don't recall any classrooms that were for the younger ages, but primarily high school. And we also were shown spiritual learning centers, what I call spiritual learning centers, scattered throughout the Midwest, mostly in eastern Nebraska. They ranged from one in Minneapolis, Minnesota, none in Iowa that I remember, several in Nebraska. There's some in, one at least, some in Colorado, believe it or not, near the Tetons, in the just at the base of the Tetons.
Okay.
In Wyoming, okay? Spiritual learning centers where people congregate in the future and learn not only about spirituality and try to develop their own spiritual abilities, but also learn about history and religion and so forth. So it would be, you might say, a new slant on religion.
You mean about loving each other and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, and also to make contact with, in other words, Christ talks over and over again to communicate with the Father, what was considered the Father. Then we call it the Father, Mother now, in the New Age type of approach.
And in the Apocrypha, he talks about riding the chariot to see the face of God. And so the chariots are often referred to throughout Apocrypha or ancient scripture, ancient text, even in the Vedic texts, flying vehicles as a means to communicate with the divine. So all connected to what you're talking about. So we have learning centers, perhaps re-education in the what I would assume to be authentic history and the purpose of the human progress. And then what's the third type of building?
Housing for schools, spiritual learning center, and then housing, especially for the Central American or Latin American orphans, and also adults, housing for Latin American adults that will, for instance, the Sheridan Creek Fireguard Cabin, not too far away, there was a complex of dome-shaped housing units that I was shown that would be built in the future, and then a 3 to 5-story school, spiritual learning center combination.
Did they tell you why this would be necessary to have housing for Latin Americans or for orphans? Did they indicate some event that was to occur south of us?
During my recollections, of course, yeah, I wondered what it was all about. I still wonder to a certain extent, but we need to state, and I'm sure everybody knows, that there are daily sightings of UFOs in Mexico for instance, especially south of Mexico City.
A great name, and, yes.
Yeah, and so there's something happening now, and also there were several, or a few to several, depending on your point of reference, encounters that indicated there would be a possible future war that would include internal struggles inside of the borders of the United States.
We're aware that there are there's a lot of volcanic activity going on around Mexico City at the present time.
Yeah, I wish.
A lot of volcanic activity in the Ring of Fire and in South America and so on. So we can't rule out possible earth changes that might be a factor coming up. We don't know, but that certainly seems to be a possibility.
Well, I was shown while I was being shown some of the installations. The one in Colorado, it was indicated there would be a large body of water down front range of the Rocky Mountains. Although I hate to say things like that because I don't normally, you know, I don't even know if I believe that. And I just pass on my experience and let other people decide
how
they want to interpret it. I was also shown a building near Du Bois, Wyoming, that would be the headquarters for that area, and it was indicated that there would be large washouts on Interstate I-80. Breaks that was indicated by earthquake, I think. I'm not quite sure about that, but... that sort of thing. I don't want to scare anybody, and everybody needs to know that everything is going to be okay, no matter what. All you have to do is have faith in the positive, and that includes God for me, and so forth. At any rate, the astonishing thing is that after I had my recollections, my daughter was working in Omaha, and she said that some people they worked with had heard about my experience, and they wanted me to come up because the fellow who Shirley MacLaine wrote about in her book, Out on a Limb, was going to speak in Omaha. So I went up to the talk, and I began to recognize people around me, and this was after my recollections in 80, I believe it was, it was the spring of 87. I began recognizing the lady next to me, the lady ahead of me, people in the audience, and particularly the group of people sitting beside the stage at the front. And I just got sort of freaked out. At any rate, I wasn't able to talk to the fellow who spoke in my return to Lincoln. And my daughter called me again, said there was a lady that worked with her that was really intrigued about my encounters, wanted to meet me. So we met, and there were several things that happened there that were, I can't tell you about, that were just fantastic. And she said that I needed to meet with a particular group that met weekly. And so we did. My daughter and I went, and I walked into the room, and I recognized every single person in the room. It was just about. And as we drove up, I recognized the building, and I was so freaked out that we turned and left. And then I finally came back, and we went into the room, and they were telling me about themselves. And it turns out they were the familiar strangers that I had traveled with in the craft into the future in the 1950s, and this was 1987 in spring.
Wow.
And we began comparing stories, and we discovered that although we weren't able to discover for certain that we had taken the exact same future time travels, we were told some of the exact same things down to the minute details. So there was no mistake. And they were. I found out they were doing then some of the exact same things I was shown they would do in the future during the time travels.
Well, so, that's a mind blower.
Yeah, it was for me. And that just made it all that harder for me to accept. And there were many, many more things that happened that were coincidental,
John,
like that.
Yeah, so I guess I want to ask... these familiar strangers, briefly, did you continue your interactions with them? Did you come together as a group? What happened?
Yes, we did. There was there was a school started, and it taught the same, you might say, future technique or improved techniques of teaching that I was shown that would be taught in the first high school that we were to build. And
well, now you were shown, excuse me, just a moment, you were shown improved techniques of teaching? Have you written about that?
No, I haven't really. When we had the Sheridan Creek Fire Guard to have time travel, I haven't really gone through that in detail, but we stopped at a couple of different times and locations along the way, and we ended up in eastern Nebraska, and we ended up at a particular site where we were told we were to build the first future school, and I saw what during that time travel, and also that's chapter 12, and also the imminent discovery, and chapter 13 of imminent discovery, which I call the Desoto de Nguala time travel. We were shown what would be taught in the classrooms, and there was a future techniques or advanced techniques being used to help kids learn better than the techniques that are used or that were used back then. So that would have been the 1950s. And so when I met these familiar strangers in 1987, see, it gets a little complicated because when you time travel, because you have to read two different eras. When I met these people in 1957, they later, we got together almost weekly, and sometimes I would go and meet with them three times a week.
Mm-hmm. In 1987.
And just phenomenal things would happen, coincidental things with our minds. And they started a school, and it was to help problem kids, especially. And some of the people were already adopting the Central American orphans, and they were a part of the school, and they taught by advanced teaching methods to help each individual kid learn the way that they needed to learn. And then because of community criticism, the school was shut down, okay?
Well, now,
so they had to close.
That brings up another subject, John, that I wanted to sort of draw out of you. In your book, you note our human resistance to change. Now, this closure of the school is an example of people's resistance to new ideas. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, well, I think that I don't want to get into politics at all, but I think in America we have some wonderful, wonderful qualities, and that is individual freedom, for one thing, and each of us are able to pursue our what we call happiness, or we're able to pursue our destiny as an individual. The problem is sometimes that some people who get in power believe that they have all the answers and that they need to exert their ideas on other people. So we don't allow, for instance, our children to learn from within. We burden them with forceful things from outside and say, you have to do it this way. So that's what I'm talking about with the school, is that the community thought they were strange, and so that they needed to teach by the accepted teaching methods that were adopted by the Board of Education and so forth, which they did. I mean, they were an accredited school, and they taught all the required things. So,
well, that's an important thing to note. That's an important thing to note. It was an accredited school, and just briefly to note that there was resistance at that point, and here was an opportunity in the 1980s for us to advance our culture a little bit in the right direction, and it got squelched. So that's all real fascinating, John, and what you had to say about education is really right on target. I'm glad that you brought that up, and I'm sure our listeners are going to be nodding their heads with what you have to say about that.
It's a beautiful way to learn. We've taught our kids to learn from within and seek out your own destiny, and they're the most beautiful people you could ever meet. But we put too much emphasis on degrees, and you know what I'm saying, give people of certain accomplishments an advantage in our society, where in reality you don't even have to do that now as an individual. You can accept yourself as great and or as small as anybody else in the world. You're as great as God, and you're as small as an ant. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that is so profound and so truthful. It brings up the point of our tendency to think that something is one thing or another. It's either or, when in fact the greater reality is all-inclusive, and that involves paradox. And the paradox is that we can be gods, but we are also, like you say, small as an ant. So we are both. We are mighty and we are insignificant. And
the earth is a growing field. That's my conclusion out of all of the encounters. It's the earth is a growing field, and we need to allow each person to grow. But in order to be a member of the project, for instance, if a person wants to contribute to the well-being of other people, you have to consider that other people as valuable as yourself. But you don't diminish yourself either. So that's what they told me. That was the requirement, that you have to be as interested in helping other people as you are yourself.
Well, that's profound and beautiful.
Well, the as far as the familiar strangers go, that was primarily the basic story. Now, we continued on for a few years. I might also say that I also met other people at some UFO conferences that I went to, and their stories matched mine exactly in some instances, but none were as extensive or complex. The problem, one of the problems with the project is that people have a difficult time working together, and everyone has been so traumatized or so taken by what has happened to them that it's hard to come up with what I call the practical protocols that are required to make something happen in a societal organization, you might say. And
yes.
So it's hard for people to do that. Now, one thing I was, one experience, I believe it was the DeSoto Bend Wildlife Area Time Travel, Chapter 13, I was and my friend were taken to the top on the roof of the first building that was to be built, and we saw several translucent pods, and we saw the outlines or the shadows of what seemed to be non-human creatures inside, and we were told that that was the headquarters for all UFO operations within the middle of the United States, that they would communicate back and forth, and there were certain things that they were trying to accomplish with certain individuals, you might say, okay?
Uh-huh.
In other words, they were communicating with other craft. Now, also at that time, it was indicated that Middle America would be the center of American culture at some time in the future. And that my idea, I remember the thoughts that went through my mind at that time, and it was as if the West Coast and the East Coast, especially the East Coast, was somewhat not populated or was non-functional in some way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about that. All of that, absolutely, written in concrete. So people need to not rely on, you know what I'm saying. In other words, take it for what it's worth, but don't stake your life on.
It's valuable insight, and you're simply relaying your experiences, John, and we understand that.
Yeah, and that's my purpose. I assume that they're going to save humankind from destroying itself is to develop the ability of individuals to operate in a more spiritual realm, you might say. Yeah.
Well, that's what our listening audience is all about, operating in the more spiritual realm. Now,
go ahead.
Well, wanted to ask you, we only have just a couple of minutes left here, so because I want to set it up for next week's show, which will be our last program. But you had mentioned to me, and also in your book, their real purpose with humanity. I'd like you to just help us conclude this program by talking for a moment about the experimentation with genetics.
Okay, well, I was shown a symbol that was being placed on, placed on the first building, which is a high school, and they said that they had created humankind in something similar to test tubes, and that they had nurtured humans throughout the ages. And if they hadn't done that, that we would still function like wild animals. And therefore, it was important for me to cooperate with them and to carry out my tasks that I've been trained and educated for most of my life. But at any rate, let me say this. It matches perfectly the Sumerian story as interpreted by Zachariah Sitchin in his Earth Chronicles, and I'll just leave it at that at this point.
Well, that's something that most of our listeners are very familiar with, John, and this is the most exciting and interesting story, and I want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight. You've just been a real trooper, and we want to pick this up next week. We're going to talk more about that, and as well as the metaphysics involved that you talk about in your book, To Earth from Heaven. We'll conclude our story. I just want to say that this has been outstanding. We've all learned a lot. We really appreciate you sharing your story with us. And next week, we're going to conclude our series with John Foster and talk about some more wonderful stuff that he has to tell us. And John's website is fosterufos.com. And you can go get his books also at Amazon.com. Eminent Discovery, A Book of Illustrations, and To Earth from Heaven. John, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it's our pleasure, John. And to our Starseed listeners, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and be sure to be with us again next week for the exciting conclusion of our interview with John Foster. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.